Welcome.
Welcome to the third attempt to record the first episode of Spectrum.
The podcast for autists.
Yep. We're adult Aspies, and we're going to talk about adult Aspie stuff on things.
Yeah, and just being in and on and around the spectrum in the adult world, and living in a world of neurotypicals is a non-neurotypical.
Yes.
Our first episode is called Let the Spectrum In. We are hoping to blow your minds, introduce some of you guys to what autism is, what Aspie actually is, and why it doesn't exist anymore, but is still a label that's used quite a bit.
Yep.
And I guess to start it off, I'm Ellie.
I'm Jenny.
And we're doing this together. So I'm 27. I'm a vet student. So is Jenny. I'm informally undiagnosed, so I've been to see therapists and psychologists and stuff in the past for other things, mainly anxiety, and they've told me that it's definitely an avenue that they see me as, and that they would suggest that I go and seek formal diagnosis for, but people who see me for just straight up anxiety and things like that didn't feel that it was their place to diagnose me further. So at the moment, I'm undiagnosed and quite happy that way because this label really fits me. And I didn't even realize it was really a thing or start thinking about it until 2 years ago when Jenny blew my mind open with a series of links and in general befriending me.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty much just my story.
And hi, I'm Jenny. I'm also, as Ellie said, we're vet students. I'm Asperger's. I'm undiagnosed, but I have a very, very strong family history of Asperger's. My father is, my older brother is really bad, he is very strongly Asperger's, and my younger brother got all of the good looks and all of the social skills from my mother's side of the family. He also stole my height. In fact, they both stole my height. I'm the shortest person in my extended family, much to my irritation. My cousins have Asperger's, my uncles have Asperger's, my grandfather has Asperger's, my great-uncle has Asperger's, had Asperger's. So I've got a really, really, really good family history of Asperger's. I also have fibromyalgia, which is a comorbidity with autism. It's another problem with sensory input, which we'll discuss later.
Comorbidity is like when you have one thing that negatively affects another one. So it's two things that you can be diagnosed with, but they don't mesh well and they actually cause further issues.
Yes.
Just because you have them both at the same time.
Yes. And also it's like you have this one, you're more likely to have this as a result as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a correlation.
Yes.
Not causation.
Not causation. Yes.
Science nerds.
So in the first episode, we're just going to introduce ourselves and discuss the diagnosis criteria in the DSM version 5 for autism spectrum disorder.
And kind of talk about where it is today and where it's not. So I said before that we refer to ourselves as Aspies. Aspies is no longer an official label.
Yep.
It used to be. It basically describes people that could consider themselves high-functioning autists.
Mm.
So now autism is a spectrum disorder, and we'll talk about why we think disorder is the wrong word, but for now, just to say that spectrum means you run the gauntlet from people who are nonverbal and require a lot of assistance to get through the day to us that can get through everyday life slightly unscathed.
Yeah, with adjustments.
With adjustments and with difficulty, but we can do it and we can function on our own.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it just depends on where you are on the spectrum and the fact that the spectrum itself is fluid. You know, one day you're functioning better than other days and that it's not a solid position. There's no label that anyone can place on you to say that this is where you are and this is, you know, it's not an IQ. It's just where you are that day. I guess as far as the disorder thing goes,
it's not a disorder. There is nothing wrong with you. Disorder kind of implies that you're broken and you can be fixed. Well, one, you're not broken, and two, you can't be fixed. You're Aspie.
And you're not. You don't need fixing.
Yeah.
What you have is a certain set of skills.
Yeah.
Not defects. And you work with those skills and you use the tools to utilize them, and you're gonna do fantastic things.
Yes.
Amazing things.
Because your brain is different, and your brain has superpowers. You can do what neurotypical schools cannot.
Yeah.
And that is awesome.
And calling it a disorder and seeing yourself as less than is just so wrong.
It
so
is.
We're going to try to avoid that word. We're probably just going to refer to it as Aspie and autism spectrum. Mm-hmm. And just discuss the tools and stuff and how we try to make use of our special individual superpowers to get through every single day.
Yep. Which is always fun.
Yeah.
So first we're going to talk about the diagnostic criteria for autism. Do you want to do A?
I can do A. So they're split up into sections. A is persistent deficits in social communication and social interaction across multiple contexts as manifested by the following, currently or by history. So that means just when you were younger or today you've developed new things. So you might have deficits in social emotional reciprocity, ranging, for example, from abnormal social approach and failure of normal back and forth conversation. You might reduce sharing of interests with other people, find it difficult to share emotions, failure to initiate or respond to social interactions. There may be deficits in nonverbal communication. For social interaction, these can range from poorly integrated verbal and nonverbal, which is key, that nonverbal communication, it could be like things from abnormal eye contact, stiff, stilted body language that people read incorrectly, and you don't understand gestures or you use gestures in your own way that's different from everyone else that other people don't understand. And then the last one is deficits in developing, maintaining, and understanding relationships, ranging, for example, from difficulties adjusting behavior to suit various social contexts to difficulties in sharing imaginative play or making friends.
Yep. And there's also a bit about a total lack of facial expressions and nonverbal communication, which we're really, really good at. It's the robot face.
It's the robot face, or resting bitch face,
yeah.
as other people like to call it.
Yeah.
To me, you know, my robot face means, fuck, I'm interested. Like,
yeah.
This is interesting. I love it. And I'm internalizing what you're saying so hard that I've apparently shut my face down.
Yeah. And that's just because you're so interested in it and you're taking it in such depth that you can't outside because you're inside so hard. And there's like deficits in maintaining and relation and understanding relationships. That's.
It's to put it bluntly, if I just say I'm happy today, what I personally mean is that I'm happy today. But if I say I'm happy today without putting a smile on my face, people don't think I mean it.
Yeah.
But I do mean it. So I just, I'm not smiling, you know, because smiling isn't a natural for me. It's a learned behavior at this point that I've learned to paste on my face because that's what makes other people feel more comfortable and respond to me better.
Yeah.
But my natural interest face is pretty deadpan. And I've learned now when I talk to most people to make those facial expressions.
Yeah.
So no more resting bitch face. Sometimes.
Sometimes. Only sometimes. If you've got the energy for it.
Yeah,
sometimes
exactly.
You're just like, I just can't right now. I just can't. Just no.
Yeah. And as far as nonverbal, I am absolutely terrible at eye contact. I don't really like it.
Yeah.
I do other things. I'll stare at your nose. I'll stare at your face. I'll stare at like your boobs if I can get away with it. Like I will look anywhere else near your eyes, so hopefully people think I'm still looking at their eyes, but I'm not.
Yeah.
It just makes me uncomfortable.
Whereas I'm the opposite. In social communications, social interactions, I don't like looking people in the eye. But in official office interactions, like you're in a meeting or anything like that, because I've been told you have to maintain eye contact, I'm just like, okay, eye contact all the time. Don't blink. Maintain eye contact.
She's like
intense
predator style.
And it makes people really uncomfortable. But I don't, because in those kinds of interactions, you maintain eye contact and then you look away. You maintain eye contact and you look away. But what do you look away at? Like, there's nothing to look away at. The table? Okay, there's a table there. Cool. It doesn't make sense to me. So I just maintain eye contact because that's just what I know how to do. So, yeah.
It's what comes with learning, and it's like because you're making up for something that doesn't come naturally to you, you almost, your learned behavior is not quite the same as for the people for whom it is just a picked up innate behavior for them.
Yeah.
Because you're forcing yourself to learn it.
Yeah.
I mean, this on here says that difficulties in sharing imaginative play or in making friends, but I mean, I had a really rich imaginative world as a kid.
Maybe it means dragons.
Like, yes, I know, and ponies, God, so and you name it. Like, but unicorn. Maybe it means like sharing it with other kids.
That, yeah.
Like, that's kind of hard to think about. I don't know.
I kind of wanted to, but at the same time, I didn't.
I liked my world that I created for myself. I didn't. I've played with other kids.
Yeah.
But most of my play was by myself.
I played Lions with other people, like when I was a lot younger. Also, ignore the funny sounds in the background. We're actually sitting in a car park.
They won't be able to hear it.
No, they might.
No, it's not even.
Oh, sweet, that's good.
That's how quiet we are.
Oh wow. Okay, we're very quiet.
Yeah.
Cool. This is interesting. I used to play Lions. And not preschool. Play center, that's the one. I used to grab a group of people and we'd go outside to Pride Rock and we'd roar and we'd do all of that kind of thing. But that's about as far as I ever got because like people.
Yeah.
Kids are.
I played games, normal, like not, I wouldn't say normal games, but games that are preset rules like kickball and whatever.
Yeah.
But my imaginative play, I guess now thinking about it, was mainly me and my own little worlds.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah. I never thought about that before. That's quite interesting.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. I definitely have difficulties adjusting my behavior for different social contexts.
Oh, yeah.
I pretty much have my game plan, this is me, and hopefully you either, like, you love me, but a lot of times that backfires, and I'm not loved. So, and I think that in adulthood, that's quite different because you do this thing called mind mapping where you've learned a set of behaviors for different contexts because now you've lived as yourself for so many years that you've learned how to kind of get by in different social contexts. But when you're a kid and you're experiencing those things for the first time, you don't deal, you know? You're like that socially awkward kid in the corner going, oh God, like there's so many people.
Yeah.
You know, that's uncomfortable at the school dances and doesn't like group activities in class. And,
nope.
You know, that could be you as a kid, but then you grow up and you have to go to uni and you have to work in a work setting in an office with people and you learn better.
Yeah, you learn how to, you learn like the structure of social interactions. So this specific social interaction, you do this specific thing. And you just apply that to each individual social interaction. So you've got your maps already set out.
It's like, you know, steps. You know that if you say hi to someone for the first time that day, it's going to be followed by, how are you doing? Or like, blah, blah, blah. And you just know which step comes next.
Yeah.
And you follow it. And that's quite, you learn and it becomes easier for you because usually people follow a set pattern of behavior.
Yeah.
Which you can memorize and work through. It's the new weird situations that throw you off. You know, new social settings, groups of people, new jobs.
Yeah.
New responsibilities in an old job.
Yeah.
These are the things that adult Aspies really need help with and that we are going to focus on in future podcasts.
Yes. So, B is restricted repetitive patterns of behavior, interests, or activities as manifested by at least two of the following. Stereotyped or repetitive motor movements, use of objects or speech. So that's like when you're saying the same thing over and over again, you're moving in the same particular way. Insistence on sameness, inflexible adherence to routines or ritualized patterns of verbal or nonverbal behavior. So extreme distress at small changes, difficulties with transitions, rigid thinking patterns, specific greeting rituals, need to take the same route or eat the same food every day. Highly restricted, fixated interests that are abnormal in intensity or focus, hyper or hypo-reactivity to sensory input or unusual interest in sensory aspects of the environment. So like adverse response to specific sounds or textures, excess smelling or touching of objects, visual fascination with lights or movement. I do all of these things.
I know. I mean, the whole thing in B, all those different things we listed are practically their own podcasts in the making. I mean, just talking about stereotyped or repetitive motor movements, this is called stimming. And stimming is something that all Aspies, no matter where you are on the spectrum, we all do it in some form or another.
Yep.
Think of it as like a nervous tic without the nerves, and sometimes with the nerves. But,
yes.
I chew on the inside of my cheek.
Not a good thing.
Not a good thing. I know. But I can't. I've done it since I was little.
Yeah.
I think it's the only stim that I had that my mom didn't comment on growing up, you know, because if you make funny noises all the time, people comment on it. Yeah. If you're a pacer, people were like, well, you can't pace in the middle of class time or in the office. Like, so those things get shut down and you're left with strange and otherly behaviors like chewing the inside of your cheek. And I play with my fingers. I play with my fingers incessantly. I love to roll the skin underneath my fingernails back and forth with my thumb in a specific pattern. I go from pinky inwards and then back out to my pinky.
Yep. I do something similar. I have to rub my fingers together in particular patterns. That's a real anxious tick for me. My thinking tick is tapping my I also think by rubbing my fingers together, but one of my thinking tics is tapping my fingers to my thumb in succession. So I start with my index and I go down to my pinky and then I go pinky to index again. So I have to do all four going down and then all four going back up. And I just repeat that. And it's the same with both hands. I have to touch the same part of the finger with the same part of my thumb. If I don't, I have to complete it. I have to complete the normal one and then I have to go back and I have to complete the abnormal one. When I'm really thinking and when I'm lying down, my toes do the twitching as well, which is...
Toe dancing.
Pretty much. They just dance away. And for a little while there, I was actually rocking backwards and forth, and that was really, really soothing, but it kind of unnerved people. Fortunately, I've gotten past that level of anxiety. Now my normal stims work for it.
A little bit less visual.
A little bit less visual.
I just realized this today. I told you, I think I used to, when I was younger, pull on my hair, like just grab like a handful of it and just tug it gently. I still do that. I was just thinking about it today and I don't really pull my hair anymore, but I'm constantly running my fingers through it. And when it's longer, because you can't see my face obviously, but it's currently just about a bob, I plaited it. I'd sit around just plaiting my hair, unplaiting my hair, plait my hair, unplait my hair. And that was stimming. And you know, you don't even realize these repetitive behaviors you're doing until you click onto it later.
Yeah.
They're just so sneaky.
They're very, very, very sneaky. I'm sure I've got a lot of other ones that I just don't realize I do, because you just don't. You just do them. You have to.
I mean, there's routines. So routines for me is or ritualized patterns of behavior.
They're big
and huge, and a great way to help manage some of the stress and anxiety that comes with being Aspie.
Yep.
Hyper reactivity to sensory input. That's, you know, hating certain fabrics on your skin, being really sensitive to the feeling of light or darkness.
Sounds. Oh, yeah, sounds.
Things moving in the distance or close by.
Yeah. I have a fixation with things moving. If something moves, I can see it. It's especially when it's an animal, that's more to the point. It's less so when it's foliage, but if it's an animal, oh boy, I see it.
You know, the clicking of the ticking of a clock is like,
oh God,
practically waterboarding torture. It's horrendous. You can't deal. And it's like, you can actually hear that slight irregular pause in between like the tick noises that is just not quite a steady, perfect beat. And it drives me insane.
Can't do clocks. Can't do watches. I can't wear watches because they just tick all the time.
And I mean, I'm wearing a Garmin watch right now, and this is the first watch that hasn't annoyed the ever loving crap out of my arm, because it's actually not that heavy. You know, the weight of a watch or the weight of jewelry on my fingers, on my skin, and the texture, it's annoying, you know. And the same thing with artificial fabrics. Very grating, wearing sandpaper.
Yes. Yeah. I like cotton.
I love cotton. Cotton's amazing. Linen's linen. It's a bit rough, but it's still better than polyester.
It's a lot better than polyester.
So, C, symptoms must be present in the early developmental period, but may not become fully manifest until social demands exceed limited capacities, or may be masked by learning strategies in later life.
The masking, we're going to have an entire episode on, probably several episodes on, because that's huge. And we've got a really interesting difference in masking techniques.
And those are learned from our different lives growing up and where we are in our world, lives today. I'm a waitress in my other life, and she was a legal secretary. Yeah. So what we've learned to do to cope and to earn money and to live is different for both of us.
It's very different for both of us because Elle is a lot better with groups. I can't do groups. I can do one-on-one fairly well. Well, for lack of a better term, I can smarm people quite well. So I'm very polite. I'm very lighthearted and all that kind of thing. But on an individual level,
and she's really good at steering. Like if you're doing a group project, she's really good at getting the point across of what she thinks is the correct next step or what we need to do for work politely. Whereas I'm so blunt that a lot of people want to dismiss what I'm saying out of hand because I'm not presenting it.
In the right way.
I'm not presenting it in the right way. Like, yeah. I come off as very harsh, even though I don't mean to. Yeah. A lot of the time, I've just, because I love what I study, I'm so exuberant about it, and I think it's really interesting. I'm like, oh, let's do this! And it comes off as, let's do this. Yes. And if you can hear that tone difference, I don't mean it. That was me exaggerating it, but I probably, like, in group settings, doing group work, that's what I come off of. But if you just put me in a social group setting, I can create those superficial connections now.
Yeah.
They just don't usually go any deeper than that.
Yeah, I'm bad at creating superficial connections in group settings. I'm good at doing that in individual type thing, but not group. I don't.
Yeah. No. But the whole early developmental period thing is we don't really like it.
No, because even back then, you're still learning like how you're allowed to express yourself and how you're not allowed to express yourself.
Yeah. Even 5-year-olds are influenced by what their parents think.
Yeah.
You know what their parents' attitudes were is to a reaction. Like if a 5-year-old has a tantrum, you know your parents are still going to react negatively to it, and you're going to learn not to throw tantrums.
Yeah.
And things like that. So you're learning how to mask, and you're learning to change your behavior really, really young. And especially as a woman growing up, I mean, the reason why women go undiagnosed is because we are taught a completely different set of masking skills to men. I mean, men get away with a lot of the behaviors and get diagnosed for those behaviors when they're younger a lot easier because they aren't told to hide it as much as we are.
Yeah. Whereas we're right from the get-go, we are not allowed to have outbursts. Like, I'm 32, so this is back in the day. Well, back in the day for us. I'm hoping it's changed a wee bit for the younger troops. But like, you're not allowed to have outbursts. You have to be quiet and you have to be polite. You're expected to be social. You're expected to be sociable. You're expected to be polite in social interactions.
And more than that, you're expected to be aware of the emotions of people around you from a young age. You know, if someone's mad at you, you as a girl child, you're expected to pick up on that and pick up the slack and be more aware of the emotions of others around you. So you're being trained at it from a young age. So I don't really think it's fair to say symptoms must be present in the early developmental period, because on the other hand, you're saying what symptoms? This is a kid that theoretically is starting from a blank slate and then instantly has different inputs all day, every day for the rest of its life. You know, what symptoms are you really describing in someone that hasn't learned how to behave yet or is learning how to behave? And that's what makes diagnosis so difficult, especially after you've already had all those things and now you're an adult dealing with the fallout.
Yeah, because, I mean, the thing is, everyone's brain is different. Everyone's Asperger's is different. The way people interpret the world is different. And then you've got the differences in how people were raised. All of this combines to basically everyone is different. Everyone's symptoms are different. And there's no cookie cutter Asperger's. There's no cookie cutter way of diagnosing because everyone presents differently. Everyone masks differently. And so you're not going to see the same symptoms.
Yeah. And so on that same vein, a lot of the things that we're going to talk about on the show about what we do to help ourselves and what you can do to help yourself, even if you're not on the spectrum, all of the solutions may not work for you, but some of them definitely will.
Yeah.
For no matter what's going on in your life, like even if it's just anxiety, some of this stuff is really good for all of it.
Because we all have anxiety. Woo!
At least in some form. If you're functioning in today's world,
congratulations.
You have anxiety.
Yeah.
I betcha.
Yeah.
Anyway, so D.
D is symptoms cause clinically significant impairment in social, occupational, and other important areas of current functioning. This is D for depression. Yeah. I'm reusing.
She made that joke before. But
I made that joke
funny.
In the first one. It's still funny. I'm so proud of myself.
Yeah, so basically, clinically significant impairment. What does that mean to you? And clinically significant impairment is based on your definition and the definition of the clinician that you're talking to. For me, it's, does it impact your daily life in a negative way? You know, it definitely feeds into my anxiety.
Yeah.
If you have such social impairment that you can't create connections at work and you can't get the promotion that you deserve because you're so alienating and your, you know, your bosses just don't even consider you,
yeah,
then that's an impairment that can be worked on through exercises and stuff, and you can work on helping yourself in that area.
Yes.
There's no easy solution to anything.
Nope.
But it's depressing because, yeah, there are aspects of being who we are that inhibit us in a neurotypical world.
Yeah.
They don't stop us, and we are going to rock this world anyway.
But it just makes it more difficult to assimilate into a neurotypical world, because we're not neurotypical.
No.
We never have been, we never will be. There is no way to make us neurotypical. We can only learn certain things. And to be honest, being Aspie, being more true to yourself as an Aspie, is actually really quite relaxing and really quite good. I'm pretty sure you can all hear that sick burnout.
Oh yeah. Shit.
Yeah, he's tearing up. Yeah, we're in a car park and he is tearing up.
Oh look, now they're both doing it.
Oh cool.
Yeah, we're just gonna keep that beautiful recording. Oh look, they're smoking up the whole entire parking lot.
Yum, and that smell of tire.
Yeah,
nice one, dickheads.
Seriously.
I might have to bleep out that word. I'm not sure if we're going to have swearing.
I don't know. I've said shit and fuck a few times. Holy Christ, the car stinks now.
Oh! Yuck!
Fucking rude asshole.
That was disgusting. Yeah, we're recording in a car park because it's really nice. We've got a nice view.
I could have hit pause, but to be honest,
it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that, yeah, then I'd have to edit it and splice it and that kind of thing, and I don't know what I'm doing.
Will get cut out, so who cares? So yeah, I don't even know what we were talking about now, so I probably will stop and go back. Okay, go.
To be honest, being true to yourself, being true to being who you are as an Aspie person, is really, really important, very freeing and very relaxing. It's difficult for other people, because you're now putting the onus of accepting you on other people instead of you morphing into what they need you to be. So it's quite difficult for other people, but it's you're Aspie. You've got superpowers that neurotypicals don't. You can go from A to D in no time flat with your passion. You know these things. You absorb everything.
Yeah, your interests, your special interests are so deep and absorbing that, like, if there's something that you're really interested in, you know everything about it. And you can talk about it at depth and with knowledge. And that's fascinating. You know, whether or not it's my interest, hearing someone go on and on about their passion, yeah, to me is wonderful.
It makes me really excited about it as well.
Yeah.
Because I don't get excited about things people aren't passionate in. If you're not passionate about it, I don't care. But if you're passionate about it and you're telling me about it, I'm like, yeah!
It's the difference between a lecturer up there loving his topic and a lecturer at the front of the classroom that's reading off the slides because, you know, we...
Like my calculus lecturer who just mumbled into the board because he was drunk all the time.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, my older brother and his son and him used to go out to the pub and just get smashed. I'm pretty sure he was hungover all of the time, and this was at like 5 o'clock. Either that or he was completely drunk. But yeah, that was
And then compare that to every single physics lecture I've ever had that I swear have gone off the same hippie bus together and wandered into class without their shoes on and their hair standing up straight, and you're like, I love physicists. They're all kooky.
They're all a wee bit bonkers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that's a really important distinction, is that a lot of traditional care for autistic children and stuff is about, like, teaching them to be more neurotypical and teaching them to hide who they are, and we are not about that.
No,
are going to teach you how to excel at being yourself. We are going to give you the tools that you need to be as non-neurotypical as you want to be, and functional if you can be, or at least improve your functionality if at all possible.
Yeah.
But don't hide it. Don't hide yourself. Be true to yourself, because who you are is amazing.
Yeah.
And something to be proud of. So
and the key thing is, you are not broken. There is nothing wrong with you. absolutely nothing wrong with you. You cannot be fixed. You do not need to be fixed. Anyone who tells you that you are broken, you are wrong. You're not.
That you need help.
You don't. Well,
okay. You may need help.
You may need help, but that's beside the point. You don't need fixing. Oh, everyone needs help. Everyone needs therapy. Oh boy, everyone needs therapy. But you don't need fixing. You are autistic. That is who you are. That is who you should always be. And being autistic is amazing. Yes, it's hard sometimes. Yes, it's hard to create relational connections with some people. But my goodness gracious me, look at your brain.
Look at the awesome things that we can do.
Yeah.
And learn and just... No, like, I mean, we can have a podcast on our own personal superpowers because Jenny and I are two different humans.
Yep.
And we do things very differently.
Yes.
But there are things that I'm amazing at and things that I suck at.
And there are things I'm amazing at and things I suck at.
Like... And they're completely different because we're different humans. But they seem to always fall on the same spectrum of behaviors. So I think the last thing on the list is so these disturbances are not better explained by intellectual disability. It just means that... these are quite vague things that we've described up above that you can tick off a box for and say, oh yeah, I do these things, but maybe it's better explained by saying that you've got generalized anxiety disorder or better explained by saying that you're a schizo or, I don't know, something else, an impairment or a learning disability, something else that fits better than this does. So if this isn't the perfect fit for you, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know? For us in this podcast, it doesn't have to be the perfect fit for you. You can still try some of the tools that we're going to talk about and see if they work for you regardless, even if you do go down the actual diagnosis track and you figure out that this, you're not an Asperger, you're not autistic, you're something else.
ADD often looks like autism, and autism often looks like ADD.
And they're comorbid.
They are.
They love to play together.
Yep. I'm fairly sure I've got aspects of ADD, and I've got a friend who thought he had Asperger's, and as it turns out, he's got... ADD with Asperger's tendencies. He's not actually Asperger's, but...
You know what? And maybe you're not even after a label, and, like, we're throwing around a lot of labels.
Yeah.
Because you kind of need labels for this podcast, but if you don't want a label, dude, don't get a label. Like, you know, you can still practice mindfulness, you can still practice things. That's not what this is about.
Yeah.
Try our tools.
Yep.
Email in.
Definitely email in your stories, email in your tools, email in questions. Yeah. We want to hear from you.
And you've got tools that you haven't heard us talk about that you think that we should try and talk about, try and then talk about, I should say. Dude, let me know because I'm always looking for more ways to succeed.
Oh yeah. And just more ways to be relaxed and like okay with stuff on things.
Yeah, definitely.
People is hard. People are
Peopling
hard.
So
England,
hard.
England is hard too. England is very hard.
So I think what in the future, some podcasts that you guys can look forward to if you're interested. Do we have any future topics lined up?
I have a lot of future topics lined up, and they are all on a piece of paper that is not with me. But
right, cool.
Some things like facial expression, vocal intonation, physical movements, because I've done a lot of. I can't say I've done a lot of psychology. I've done a small amount of psychology, and I'm really, really, really interested in behavior specifically and social interactions and how you alter yourself and how other people respond. I've got a few ideas of how you can move your body in a way that will open yourself up and open the conversation, things like that.
We've got like medication in you, you know, if you want to go down that route.
Yes, medication is amazing.
I had a friend that brought up a very important question herself is, where is your anxiety stemming from? Is it external or internal?
Yep.
That's a very interesting topic. That's a
very, and very important topic.
Yeah, stimming, and all of the tools out there that are actually for kids that you can manipulate into being really good stims for adults in adult settings, because obviously you can't take stim toys to work with you, but there are other things you can do. So yeah, welcome to our podcast, and thanks for listening.
Yes, thank you. Okay, bye.
Bye. Ha ha ha!